Right now, Russia has more than 150,000 troops encircling Ukraine and Belarus and along Ukraine's border.
Skepticism in Washington at Russia's latest moves on the Ukraine border. It's Thursday, February 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, no lockdown in Hong Kong. Beijing Olympics update. NATO meets to discuss options in Ukraine. Auto production restarts in North America. And training more women to code. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Russia says it is pulling some of its troops deployed near the border with Ukraine back to their bases, but officials in Kyiv are skeptical, and the U.S. has temporarily closed its embassy in the Ukrainian capital and moved its core staff west, closer to the Polish border. This, as Pentagon spokesperson John Kirby tells reporters, that Washington believes China supports the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Sinny Sain reports.
Russia says it has moved some of its military units away from its borders with Ukraine. But President Joe Biden spoke to Americans about the grave situation Tuesday, saying the U.S. has not verified those claims.
Fact remains, right now, Russia has more than 150,000 troops encircling Ukraine and Belarus and along Ukraine's border. An invasion remains distinctly possible.
Biden also addressed the people of Russia directly, saying they are not an enemy of America. He said 77 years ago, the U.S. and Russia fought side by side to end the worst war in history.
World War II was a war of necessity. But if Russia attacks Ukraine, it would be a war of choice or a war without cause or reason. I say these things not to provoke, but to speak the truth, because the truth matters.
Meanwhile, in Moscow, Russian President Vladimir Putin met with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz Tuesday and told reporters he is ready to work further with the West to de-escalate tensions over Ukraine. Scholz told reporters that Russia saying it is pulling some forces back from the border is a hopeful sign.
For my generation, war has become unthinkable in Europe, and we must ensure that it remains so. It is our damn duty and our mission as heads of state and government to prevent an escalation of war in Europe.
Invasion fears remain high, as Ukraine said Tuesday that the websites of the country's defense ministry and armed forces and the websites of two state banks have been hit by a cyber attack, possibly of Russian origin. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Chinese netizens pressure government about case of chained mother. The implications of deepening economic ties between Pakistan, China. Volcano damage to Tonga undersea cable worse than expected. Citizen journalists fight back against Myanmar military's crackdown. Russia's Olympic doping case helps China skirt dicey topics. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam has ruled out a citywide lockdown to curb the spread of the coronavirus, but a surge of infections meant she could not preclude the possibility of postponing next month's chief executive election. Lam, who has not confirmed whether she will seek another five-year term as head of the Chinese-ruled city, said her government's response to the outbreak had not been satisfactory, with hospitals and medical staff overwhelmed.
As far as Hong Kong is concerned, we need to find our own way out of this epidemic. And so far, our measures to contain the spread of a disease remains a legitimate and valid one. The problem we are facing is given the magnitude, the pace of and the severity of this fifth wave, it has outgrown our capacity. So the immediate response of the Hong Kong SAR government, now with the support of the Central People's Government, is to enhance the capacities at various parts of this anti-epidemic effort. And we are doing this. So I will have to say it very clearly that we have no plans for any widespread city lockdown, as you have seen in some of the other places.
Asked whether Hong Kong's chief executive election set for March 27th would go ahead, Lam said the plans were unchanged, but given the severity and speed of this latest wave, she said, the situation would be continuously reviewed. A committee of 1,500 members, all vetted by authorities for their patriotism and loyalty to Beijing, participate in electing the next leader. Meantime, Hong Kong will introduce a vaccine pass starting February 24th, where residents will have to show proof of vaccination before entering restaurants, supermarkets, and shopping centers. For Hong Kong residents, the surge in cases comes amid rising pandemic fatigue. Places of worship, hair salons, and other businesses were ordered to close. Schools extended a suspension of in-class teaching to March 6th. Cambodia is powering up its new national internet gateway, a move activists say will allow the government to further silence the country's embattled opposition voices. UN rights experts warn the gateway, which will funnel all web traffic through a state-controlled entry point from February 6th on, will have a devastating effect on privacy and free speech. It is the latest move by authoritarian ruler Hun Sen to clamp down on dissent in a country that has arrested dozens for online posts in recent years, critics say. Chok Saphip is the executive director for the Cambodian Center for Human Rights.
The step that the government have come up with restrictive legislation with the arrest or charge against online user is something adding to what have been happening already, you know, when people express on the street, you know. So the more people become fully aware through social media, the more people engage through social media, it poses the risk for the government. So in order to curb that risk, of course, the control had to be applied.
In 2021, at least 39 Cambodians were arrested, jailed, or had arrest warrants issued against them for online posts that fell afoul of government censors. Happening now in Asia. Former boxing champion and presidential candidate Manny Pacquiao was greeted by hundreds of supporters during a campaign stop in Manila on Wednesday. He said he is still optimistic, even though he is in third place in a recent presidential survey. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. At the Beijing Olympics, headed into competition today, Norway leads the medals table with 13 gold medals, 7 silver, and 8 bronze. Germany is currently second in the official table, ranked by gold medals. They have 10, along with 6 silver and 4 bronze. The U.S. has risen to third place with 8 gold medals, 7 silver, and 4 bronze. Host China has moved up to fourth place with 7 gold, 4 silver, and 2 bronze medals. Russian athletes are in ninth place with 4 golds, 8 silvers, and 12 bronze medals. VOA's Chris Cascajo has the latest in this Olympic update.
In men's aerials, China's Qi Guangpu cleanly landed a quintuple twisting triple backflip in the medal round. 5 of his 6 competitors tried the same trick, and only he did it clean. Qi finished 4th at the 2014 Sochi Olympics, 7th in Pyeongchang 4 years ago, and also competed at Vancouver in 2010. China has 7 golds and 13 medals in Beijing, its most ever at a Winter Games. International Olympic Committee officials said it is premature to make a statement on the case of the 15-year-old Russian figure skater Kamila Valieva, who tested positive for a banned drug.
We have an absolute duty to follow the letter of the law. Due process is very, very important. We all talk about due process when it's someone else. When it occurs to us, it's very, very important. So think of the personal issue of a person involved. We all need to follow the due process. This person has not even had their B sample opened. The case is not even finished yet. So to make all these grand statements is, I think, a little bit premature.
If Valieva wins a medal in the event Thursday, no medal ceremony will be held until her case is resolved. American figure skater Vincent Zhou is out of quarantine after testing positive for COVID-19 at the Beijing Games, and he plans to perform in the exhibition gala that traditionally closes the Olympic program on Sunday. Zhou had to withdraw from the men's event after his positive COVID test. Wednesday's other gold medal winners, in women's biathlon four-person relay, Sweden, in men's cross-country team sprint, Norway, in women's cross-country team sprint, Germany, in men's slopestyle freestyle, the U.S. took gold and silver. In men's short track speed skating 5,000-meter relay, Canada won gold. And in women's 1,500-meter short track, Choi Min-jong of South Korea won her second straight gold medal. Chris Cascajo, VOA News, Washington.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, NATO defense officials meet to discuss options in Ukraine.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
Happening now in Asia. Vietnam will reopen to international tourists on March 15th after a two-year border closure due to the pandemic. That's according to a government announcement on Wednesday. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin is in Belgium for 2 days of talks with NATO leadership and allied defense ministers. The meeting comes as tens of thousands of Russian troops have surrounded Ukraine from the north, south, and east. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has more from Brussels.
A potentially imminent invasion from a familiar foe. 150,000 Russian troops amassed on Ukraine's borders. The territorial integrity of one of NATO's eastern neighbors at stake.
I think of a boa constrictor that is squeezing Ukraine to force the government of President Zelensky to blink, to make some giant concession.
At NATO, defense leaders showing a unified alliance this week with meetings focused on deterring Russia.
This really is a decisive moment for NATO. The likes of which we have not really seen potentially since NATO was established in 1949.
U.S. fighter jets ready to monitor the skies on NATO's eastern flank. An American aircraft carrier in the Adriatic Sea for the first time in decades. Thousands of additional U.S. troops deployed to Poland and Romania. All as Russian legislators Tuesday urged Russian President Vladimir Putin to formally recognize the separatist-controlled regions of eastern Ukraine as independent states, a move Putin could use to try to justify an incursion in an area it no longer recognizes as Ukraine's territory. But U.S. President Joe Biden warned Tuesday of severe economic and political consequences should Russia invade Ukraine.
It'll be met with overwhelming international condemnation. The world will not forget that Russia chose needless death and destruction. Invading Ukraine will prove to be a self-inflicted wound.
Russia now says it is pulling back troops from Ukraine's border, although the president says the U.S. could not yet confirm Moscow's claim. Carla Babb, VOA News, Brussels.
You can read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. Making headlines in Asia. Protesters opposing a proposed $500 million grant for Nepal from the United States clashed with police officers outside Parliament Wednesday, leaving injuries on both sides. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. While the North American auto industry restarted production on Monday after being closed for nearly a week due to COVID-19 mandate protests on the border, experts say it will take several days for production to return to normal because of a delay in parts delivery. Meantime, the Ottawa police chief resigned Tuesday amid criticism over the force's poor response to the continued trucker protests in the capital city. Chief Peter Slowly was criticized widely as the police failed to properly handle the protests by a large group of Canadian truckers and their supporters, who began to gather in the city in late January opposing the government's vaccine requirements at the Canada-U.S. land border amid other COVID-19 restrictions. The Canadian government announced a new rule on January 15th requiring truck drivers traveling between Canada and the U.S. to show proof of COVID-19 vaccination when entering Canada. Soon after the announcement, a large number of truck drivers from Canada and the U.S. voiced strong opposition immediately and formed a convoy which entered Ottawa on January 28th. On February 6th, the city of Ottawa declared a state of emergency. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says he has invoked emergency powers to try to quell the protests.
The police will be given more tools to restore order in places where public assemblies can constitute illegal and dangerous activities, such as blockades and occupations as seen in Ottawa, the Ambassador Bridge, and elsewhere. These tools include strengthening their ability to impose fines or imprisonment. The government will designate, secure, and protect places and infrastructure that are critical to our economy and people's jobs, including border crossings and airports. We cannot and will not allow illegal and dangerous activities to continue.
Trudeau ruled out using the military and said Monday that the emergency measures will be time-limited, geographically targeted, as well as reasonable and proportionate to the threats they are meant to address. Police spoke with some truck drivers and allowed them to move their vehicles off smaller streets, some residential, and onto Wellington Street at Parliament Hill.
What they have to do, I don't know. It is their job. Me, if I will be forced to move, I will do it. I cannot stay here alone. You understand? If everybody is gone, where I will go, of course.
Members of the self-styled Freedom Convoy have also blockaded various U.S.-Canadian border crossings, though the busiest and most important, the Ambassador Bridge connecting Windsor, Ontario to Detroit, was reopened last weekend. It remains unclear whether copycat demonstrations decrying COVID-19 pandemic restrictions and mandates will also materialize in the United States. Since the trucker protests began in Canada several weeks ago, attempts to emulate them have sprung up in other countries, though none have caused anything close to the disruption in Canada and in some U.S. cities along the two countries' vast common border. Now on VOA Asia. The technology industry has long employed mostly men in technical roles, but a nonprofit group in Seattle, Washington is trying to change that. VOA's Natasha Mazgavoya reports.
Rebecca Muniz wanted to be an engineer when she was younger, but she didn't see herself as having a career in the tech industry.
I was mostly around white men, and I didn't really feel comfortable.
Now Muniz, who worked in communications, is a student at Ada Developers Academy, a Seattle not-for-profit organization. It trains women from groups underrepresented in tech. In 6 months, these students are taught how to be software developers, followed by an internship. Academy head Lauren Sato says the organization has a big vision for what success means.
We're able to have a significant impact on the number of women and gender diverse folks entering the industry each year.
Around the world, bootcamp-style training programs have taken off, promising those eager to break into the tech industry marketable skills fast. Some of the programs have had mixed results, overpromising job opportunities and charging high fees. At Ada, tuition is free. Childcare is provided on site, but the admission rate is low and experience can be challenging.
I honestly just kind of cried a lot because there are moments where you come across an error that it just, you have no idea what to do.
The classes are full-time and many are juggling families. Ali Ibarra used to be a social studies teacher.
My biggest fear is failure. I think, you know, this is a big risk that I'm taking in pivoting careers.
Since it was founded in 2013, Ada has had more than 300 graduates. 94% found a job in tech, the organization says. For many of the students, it's not just about landing a job, but changing the technology industry once they're inside.
Making sure that I'm not the only woman of color at the table.
The boot camp, which is expanding nationally, looks to each graduate as a possible catalyst of change. Natasha Mozgovaya, VOA News, Seattle, Washington.
Billions of dollars have poured in from federal and local governments to help America's homeless survive against COVID-19. And this spending is helping, for now. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias examines whether the strategy spurred by the pandemic could be a long-term solution to this chronic U.S. problem.
This moment, sir.
Daniel Bowe is among the more than half a million people homeless in the U.S. A newspaper vendor, Bowe spends his nights outside, often in freezing temperatures.
I wish I could get a house, but there ain't gonna be no hop, skip, and a jump. You're gonna go through some trials and tribulations, or sign some papers or something like that. They ain't gonna just give it to you.
But in this COVID-19 pandemic, life has improved for some homeless Americans. Fearing that the virus would spread fast in crowded shelters, local governments and nonprofit groups across the country rush to move the homeless to hotels, where they can isolate and get medical care. 62-year-old Queenie Featherstone qualified in Washington, D.C., which has the country's highest homeless rate per capita.
I have health issues, and I'm hearing impaired. I feel pretty safe of the shelters that I have stayed and slept in were not good.
Having folks come and stay at the hotel has made it a lot easier to connect them to resources. We see higher rates of vaccination and better access to permanent housing.
In D.C., local authorities tax the wealthy to raise $65 million for permanent housing. And thanks to pandemic aid passed by the U.S. Congress, billions of dollars are flowing to help unhoused Americans nationwide.
That includes 70,000 emergency housing vouchers that communities can use to find private apartments on the private market, as well as $5 billion in grants that help communities to build units of housing.
That's a lot, but the need is also big. Between 2019 and 2020, the number of unsheltered individuals increased by 7%, driven by a housing shortage and spiking rents, particularly in cities like Los Angeles.
Housing alone doesn't seem to restore mental stability or get people off of drugs and alcohol. When the outcomes seem so modest, that leads to frustration and more uncertainty as to whether or not, you can just keep increasing funding up and up and up.
But housing people first is what President Joe Biden's administration is betting on. That approach has been less costly and more effective. And communities do provide supportive services, says Hotz Cho.
We as taxpayers are spending somewhere between $40,000 to $60,000 on many people experiencing homelessness. And the actual solution, which is to provide housing and services, is often no more expensive than $20,000 or $25,000 per person per year, and often even much less than that.
Robert Warren, who heads an advocacy group, has been houseless three times in his life. He says lessons from the COVID-19 pandemic should point to a long-term strategy to fight homelessness.
Having to cook, clean, you know what I'm saying, and fend for themselves in some form or fashion. A lot of these folks need to learn that stuff. And the resources there, to engage them has not been there.
For Queenie Featherstone, who recovered from COVID-19 in December, just having a stable room is keeping her outlook brighter.
I'm strong enough to work because that's the right thing to do, to keep a roof over your head. I can be a success story. I'm not on drugs. I'm not alcoholic. I'm not severely mental. It's just I fell on tough times.
Meantime, Featherstone plans to keep making daily rounds to homeless encampments to support less fortunate Americans however she can. Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy the day.